Darcy and I work with International Mission for the Pentecostal Assemblies of Canada. If that's not a long title, I don't know what is, because he is the Personnel and Family Life Director. So what that means is that we look for the crazy ones, those that are called by God to take the gospel of Jesus to other parts of the world. We find them, we train them, and then we care for them.
Yeah, and if that's you, if you're feeling a call, you don't have to be just a young person. You can be someone who's looking at retirement, all those kind of things, and everything in between. We have all kinds of people who go on mission.
Exactly. We have people that are just finishing up. They're retiring. And they say, we've got another decade in us. We've got some room for adventure here. We just sent a couple to Thailand, actually, from Quebec. And it's never too late. It's never the right time, ever. Because either, you know, you just got married, you got to get on your feet, or you just had kids and you don't want to take them away from grandparents. Or you know, then suddenly they're in school, and then suddenly, like, it's never the right time. But it's always the right time.
Yeah.
So.
Leanne has had a pretty amazing year. I remember lying in bed and she's like, you know, I can't stand women's ministry. I don't like it. I never want to be a part of it. And I'm like, Leanne, I think you should reconsider. There's something on your life. And she said, I don't want to.
I was pastoring in Langley and quite enjoying it. And then God just started to call me. And if you've ever experienced that, you know that there's no use saying no. There's no use resisting. And basically, I started working with women. I started something called Zoe Projects, which connects Canadians with the work that our global workers and national partners are doing, specifically with women around the globe.
And Zoe means the life that comes from God.
Yeah.
That's what it means. And so through Canadians reaching out to women around the world, we want to bring the life that comes from God to them. And what's neat for your Penticton Bethel girl is that just this year she was appointed to be the National Women's Ministry Coordinator for the PAOC.
For all of Canada. And this is from a girl who said...
And this is from the girl who said, I don't want to ever do that.
And
so God has
are.
A sense of humor and I laughed.
It's good. So talking about women... Talking about the issues of women, attitudes towards and conditions for girls and women across the globe is not good. Women can be vulnerable, especially in the developing world. And a few years ago, I read a book by Nicholas Kristof and Cheryl Wu Dunn, and they wrote a book called Half the Sky. It was on like the bestsellers list for months and months and months. They published it in 2009, and I actually would recommend that for a book to read. And in that book, they say that 107 million girls are missing from the globe today. Sometimes we hear stuff like that, and we can't even begin to wrap our minds around it. But, you know, when I read that, I'm like, how? How is that possible? Why? Why are they missing? Well, there's lots of reasons. In many parts of the world, daughters are less valued. They're far less likely to be vaccinated than sons. They don't get access to health care at the same rate boys do. In many parts of the world, the advance of ultrasound technology has led to an epidemic of sex selection abortions, where people are thrilled that, and I quote, we don't have to have girls any longer. Girls in India from the ages of 1 to 5 years old are 50% more likely to die than boys in the same age bracket. And the best estimate, according to Kristof and Wu Dunn, is that a little Indian girl dies from discrimination every 4 minutes. Over 130 million women living in the world today have undergone female circumcision. Around 14 million girls, some as young as 8 years old, were married in 2014. And an estimated 1.2 million children are trafficked into slavery each year, with 80% of those being girls. And we won't even get into the statistics surrounding education. As difficult as it is to hear stats like this, it's actually an amazing opportunity for the Church of Jesus Christ. And the reason I say this is because the gospel at its very core speaks to the value, worth, and dignity of the daughters. I got to say that again because that's exciting. The gospel at its very core speaks to the value and worth and dignity of the daughters, because daughters are image bearers. I respond very well to that. Like, when we think about image bearing, I think women tend to think, oh, it's men who bear the image of God, and somehow we're these like little add-ons. That somehow we're just the helpers, or we're not the real image bearers, but, you know, men, and then we're here. But really, if you look at the creation narrative, which we don't have time to get into this morning, but if you look at the gospel, God needs both men and women to display who he is. So women are not second class. They are not afterthoughts. They are not relegated to small little roles within church and community. They actually bear something that shows who God is. See, I believe that this message of identity and worth and dignity, these are the messages that need to get out to vulnerable women all around the world, and they need to hear it, and they need to see it demonstrated. I'm also working on leadership development in Canada, because I believe that women in Canada, particularly Pentecostal women, nice little church ladies, which we all are a sleeping giant. That if we really caught who we are, if we really caught that we're image bearers, if we really caught that we were created for purpose and for plan, and if we could figure out how to mobilize in teams of women, it would be unbelievable. So yes, I'm called to women's ministries. But it's not about like gathering and, you know, what we've known. So the vision. One of the most fundamental questions people have asked since the beginning of time is, whether they know they're asking it or not, but it's this question: what is God like? People answer it all kinds of ways. He's the uninterested grandfather-like guy up in his rocking chair. He's the angry judge just waiting for you to mess up just a bit. And then we come down and boom. It's been said before that if you want to know what God is like, look to Jesus. Listen to his words for sure. But also learn from how he lived. Learn from his interactions. Now, we make judgments about people every day. Whether we know it or not, all of us subscribe to a human value scale. Because we are soaking in North America. We're soaking in a system that likes to categorize and rank people. And we use all kinds of markers in order to do this well. So we use things like power and status. We look at gender. We look at beauty. We look at skin color. I remember being in Sri Lanka a couple years ago with Darcy, and we were meeting this family, and this mom and dad. These are Christian people, beautiful people, and they're introducing us to their family. And as they're introducing their eldest daughter, they say to us, "She's a bit darker." As if that's the worst thing in the world. We judge on marital status. Are you married? If you're single, why are you single? If you know, why are you not married? We judge on education. Oh my goodness, we love this. How many degrees do you have? How many letters behind your name? As soon as there's more letters, we're impressed. We judge on bank account balances. We judge on vacations taken. We judge on sizes of homes. Darcy and I lived in a townhouse for about a decade because we live in the Lower Mainland, and it's quite expensive there, if you've heard. But I can't tell you the amount of times people would say to us, "Are you still in that townhouse? Okay, what are they asking there?" They're saying, "When are you going to get a real home?" As if somehow a townhouse is simply a stepping stone to something bigger and better. What is that? That's measurement. We measure fame, and this is huge in our current climate, how well known you are, how big is your audience, your number of Twitter followers, your friends on Facebook. Can I just tell you, those 1,000 friends on Facebook are not all your friends. I don't know if you knew that. Now we measure all of the time, and we think we might have smartened up over the centuries. We compare ourselves to the class systems of 19th century Europe or the caste systems of modern day India, and we think, we're not like that. But actually, I would argue that we still, even if it's subconscious, we still take inventories of the accomplishments of others and then judge their value based on how they are doing. And when we do this, you got to know this, we're actually keeping tabs on how we ourselves are measuring up. Am I speaking truth? Okay, well, this isn't new. This is the world that Jesus was born into. They held very similar values. There was a pecking order that firmly put people in their place. And because of that order, some were in, some were out. Some were respected, others were despised. Some held power, and others were utterly powerless. So now when Jesus came, he came to bring in a new kingdom. And what that means is this kingdom absolutely challenged the conventional wisdom, systems, and patterns of the world and of the religious. And he challenged everything that did not reflect the heart of God, which we know led him into just major clashes with the power brokers as those systems collided, because he had a lot to say about pecking order. Jesus famously welcomed little kids. You know, his disciples were always trying to shoo them away. You know, it's like, just don't bug him. He's a big deal. And he needs to talk with people who are big deals, you know. And so they're trying to get the kids away so that he wouldn't be distracted from the important people. And there's this well-known little exchange found in Matthew chapter 19, verse 14. It's going to be on the screen. And it says this: "But Jesus said, 'Let the children come to me. Don't stop them, for the kingdom of heaven belongs to those who are like these children.' And he placed his hands on their heads, and he blessed them before he left." So in today's world, I mean, the status of children is quite elevated, you know. There's been mass changes in the last 100 years. You can no longer send your kids to the coal mines. Not all of it is good, because this generation is raising a bunch of kids that think it's all about them. But in this context of Jesus, children had little importance. In fact, one writer said that in the ancient world, children could be considered half human until puberty. And in some scenarios, babies, particularly girls, were seen as disposable. And so Jesus surprises them with one of the great reversals that he is known for by saying, "Let them come." And the disciples are like, "What? Let them come." And he lays his hands on these children, and he shows an acceptance and an affection for them and values them, saying, these little people are not half human. They aren't having to wait to grow into value. They are fully human with their own identity and their dignity and their personalities and their questions. And with that small act of blessing, he was saying, you have value now. Verse 14 says, you know, for the kingdom of heaven belongs to those who are like these children. Now, I've always read this to mean that the kingdom of heaven belongs to those who approach God with just kind of this the innocence of someone as a child of faith. But actually, another way to think about this is in terms of status. That the kingdom belongs to the humble and the lowly and those who have been disqualified, the undervalued, the looked down upon, those absent from the table. Salvation is open to all, the least of these. So we can think of the kids, but who else was marginalized in Jesus' context? Women. They were vulnerable in this society. I mean, the power structures that had been organized over hundreds and hundreds of years reflected inequality. And women had much lower status. And I hesitate to oversimplify it because there were women who were business owners with money and privilege and power, you know. The Old Testament laws provided safety nets for widows, et cetera, et cetera. But what we can say about it is that it was a male-dominated world, where men influenced control over women. So, I mean, a woman's experience depended on what kind of man she lived under the protection of. So if I had been in this day married to the man that I'm married to, I would have done very, very well.
Thank you.
I would have been fine. But that wouldn't have been the experience for all men, because some men were good, others were not, and as a result, women were vulnerable to abuse, and they were vulnerable to victimization. So, if we want to know what God is like, then we look to his actions. So how did Jesus treat women? Well, in a system where education was reserved for males, Jesus encouraged women to learn. That was just a given for him. We read in Luke that women were counted among his greatest friends and ministry supporters. We can read in Mark that Jesus ignored the purity laws, you know, the laws that suggested if a woman was menstruating, you couldn't touch her. And he, like, whoa, blew everybody away by touching her. He ignored the social customs to touch a woman who'd been bleeding for 12 years. Now, here's the thing. We think of that. Okay, all of us girls go, well, what a drag to have your period for 12 years. Sorry, guys. But what a drag. But let's think about this even further. Not only is it a physical inconvenience, but what it actually means is she's on the outside of society. Because for 12 years, she cannot worship with her community. For 12 years, there are so many places that she cannot access because of this law. And Jesus looks at her, touches her, and takes care of the physical part of it. But you know what he was doing in that moment? He was saying, come back in. John 4 records the famous account of the woman at the well. I mean, this girl had so many strikes against her. She's Samaritan, so like there's so much prejudicial towards her. She's female. And on top of that, she has a bad reputation because she's living with a series of men. And you know, it's so easy to judge her, but I wonder what was her circumstances that put her in that position? We all make choices, absolutely. But let's be clear, some of our choices almost happen for us. So I wonder what her circumstances were. And she was completely on the outside, and so she goes to the well at midday because she's an outsider in the community, because the other women do not want to rub shoulders with her. And again, Jesus, breaking time-honored cultural boundaries, he sees her, he talks to her, and he meets her deepest need. Why does he do that? Because she mattered. We could go on and on and on. So there's the kids. There's the women. How about the diseased? We can read in Mark chapter 1, verses 40 to 41, a man with leprosy came and knelt in front of Jesus, begging to be healed. "If you're willing, you can heal me and you can make me clean," he said. And moved with compassion, Jesus reached out and touched him. "I am willing," he said, "be healed." Again, we don't get how radical this is. Because the Israelites believed that leprosy was one of the many scourges that God inflicted upon people because of their sins. So if you had leprosy, it's your fault. It's not like you are open to the compassion of the community. It's your fault. You're literally untouchable, and you eke out an existence on the fringes of society. And here's the thing. Jesus moved with compassion, touched him, and healed him. Now, I like physical touch. I'm quite tactile. Imagine not being touched for decades. You know, we look at that story and we go, well, Jesus met him and healed him and then, you know, brought spiritual renewal to his life, and all of that is true. But think about the need of just being touched. See, when we look at the teaching of and ministry of Jesus as a whole, we see again and again that Jesus elevated those who had little value according to the world's patterns. He elevated the sick, the kids, the children, the Gentiles. They were all elevated, accepted, and declared important. The least of these. What Jesus was doing was bringing in a brand new value scale. He was saying, pretty much everything the world says is important to be measured in people just isn't. There is a new grid. Human beings have great worth, full stop. Everyone, there's no such thing as status in God's kingdom. It doesn't depend on who you are, where you've come from, or what you do. Everyone bears intrinsic value because they have been made in God's image. That's the gospel. That's the kingdom. See, Jesus taught us how to live. He showed us what's important. And if people matter to Jesus, they must matter to us. This is really what fuels us in our work through International Mission and Zoe Project. Darcy's going to give you a couple of snapshots.
So 26 and a half years ago, when Leanne and I stood here and we made our marriage vows to each other, my world changed. I made a commitment to not only receive love from Leanne, but to give love and to honor her. God, in his posture towards us, extends his love towards us and a covenantal vow to us that he's going to be there for us. And when we receive that love at salvation, our response is to love the people that he loves. So when we answer the question, what is God like, and we see who he values, then our natural response is to value those same people and to take on the values of Christ. So yeah, we do have a few examples. We were telling the folks yesterday about our worker in Myanmar, a girl named Cavell, Peter and Cavell Dove, and they started a bakehouse where girls could come and be apprenticed and have jobs, and at the end of a year, they would be able to get a good job because they'd had an apprenticeship in a high-quality learning environment. And the kind of girls that they would take in were kind of the outcasts of society. So one of their girls, her name is Nay. When she was married and 5 months pregnant when her and her husband were arrested because of his suspected political activities. So they're both put in jail. There's no trial. There's no evidence presented. And she had no role in anything, but yet she was still sent to prison. She had her baby in jail and was in jail for a number of years. Her husband got out early, and when she got out, after him, he was gone. And so there she is with a daughter, and the daughter had been taken away. Her husband was gone, and here she was with nothing. An NGO helped her reunite with her daughter, and then it was pretty sketchy for her because she had no means of support. But she was accepted by the Yangon Bakehouse, our Canadian missionary.
And Zoe Partner.
And Zoe Partner in Myanmar. And because of that, her life turned. And what we loved about it is that the program itself wasn't necessarily a Christian program, but the girls who were doing the program, running the program, are believers. And during the process of those apprenticeships, Nay and the others who walk through it become Christians because they encounter the love of Jesus. Another way that we reach out is through things like clean water. Just this February, Leanne and I were in Honduras. And in Honduras in 1998, like a long time ago, Hurricane Mitch came through and wiped out the downtown of the capital city. And there were thousands of people living in the downtown area, the poor of the capital, and they were forced to move up into the hills. There's no infrastructure in the hills, there's no water, there were no roads, there was nothing, but they built these corrugated tin houses, like just shacks. And now, all these years later, 17 years later, there's communities of tens of thousands of people up on the hills surrounding Tegucigalpa, if I said that right. and it's run by gangs. Like the communities are run by gangs who monitor the water that comes in and out to that community. And so our missionaries have been working to purchase a small plot of property about the size of this platform, maybe a little bit bigger than that, where we can drill a well and provide water for the community. There is a mayor, his name is Don Santos, and he came and he said, please, would you help us? Would you help us to do a well here in Tegucigalpa on this hillside? He said, when the hurricanes came through, there was international aid promised. In fact, there was, I think, $2.4 billion of aid that was committed to Honduras, but guess how much of it got up to there?
Right.
None.
It was interesting, too, because as we were walking through the village, you know, it's dry, dusty. Think of yourself camping for 17 years, right? That gets old. Like, I last about 3 days, don't I? No, maybe two. Let's be honest. Do you remember going, and it's all dry and dusty, and then there's like this swath of green because the underwater, like the water underneath it, and that's what we want to access.
And that is being like Jesus to that community. I said to the group yesterday, I don't know that you realize how big missions is. And when Canadians have heard, go and make disciples, when they've heard that Great Commission, they've actually gone and done some amazing things. Like, we were in Zimbabwe and saw a feeding program. And I didn't know, and I grew up in PAOC, I didn't know that Canadian Pentecostals feed 10 to 12,000 kids every day in Zimbabwe during drought. Didn't know that. And yet, as we pulled up to a school on a Saturday, so not a school day, there were 250 to 300 kids lined up. Each of them had their little bowl just like that, and we fed them a porridge fortified with vitamins, and they came to receive, and we asked the question, is this, you know, like, do they have other food at home? And they said, no, this is probably the only meal that they'll get.
And then I'm watching the mamas, because, like, mums, hey? And I'm watching them just because they've got nothing, and you can just see them longing for their children to be fed and to be okay.
So the world sees who God is through us when we walk out that Great Commission.
Yeah. It's interesting when you talk about this, like I shared a bunch of stats at the beginning, and you know, hearing stories like this, it can be overwhelming. And I think too, like there's so many opportunities for awareness. I think of, you know, Facebook and Instagram and Twitter. Like it's really easy to kind of stay up to speed with everywhere. And we can even pledge our allegiance to things by liking things and that kind of thing. But awareness is not always translating to action. And the gospel has us moving. It has us going forward. And I think sometimes it's almost like seeing too many World Vision commercials where we just honestly just get desensitized to what's going on in the world. And I was thinking about Nehemiah. If you remember that story where the walls of Jerusalem needed to be rebuilt. And the walls had been laying in rubble for generations. And Nehemiah is talking with some of his friends that had just been there and said, tell me about the wall. Tell me what's going on. And the brothers share with him what was going on. And there's this small little verse, I think it's in chapter 1, where it says, and Nehemiah wept. So this would have been not new news for Nehemiah. He'd heard this his whole growing up. This was not new for him. But in a moment, something happened where he got it, and it struck him, and he was moved within. And I just believe that that is something that the Spirit can do for us. If we're willing and open to say, okay, I'm hearing all this stuff. What do I do with it? It begins with allowing your heart to be moved with compassion by the Spirit of God. And then he went on to build the wall. So back to the question, what is God like? Well, every time we connect with women in brothels with compassion and not judgment, it's like holding up a banner that says, this is what God is like.
Every time that we offer leadership development for women or offer microfinances, something, somewhere where they can get some traction in life, we're holding up a sign for them that says, this is what God is like.
Every time we offer a well and build a well and put it in the hands of people, we say, this is what God is like.
Every time that we contribute and provide resources and food to a child in Zimbabwe, we're saying to that nation, to that community, this is what God is like.
Every time we rescue a woman on the street, you know, we've spent a lot of time in Asia in the last year, and it's just like crazy what's going on. Crazy. But every time we go and we see and we say, this isn't right, and you are worth more than this. You are a daughter of God. You're a child of God. Every time we declare that, every time we share the good news of the kingdom And not just act, but with our words, tell them about Christ. Every time we tell them that there is a way for them to truly live, not just exist, but live. Every time we do that, we say, this is what God is like.
You've been walking through the Great Commission. And I love the picture, actually, of the Great Commission, because there's God's part where he infuses that love and he demonstrates to us what he is like. And this morning, I don't know where all of you are at, but maybe there's someone here this morning who needs a revelation of who God is. Maybe you need healing. Maybe you need to experience that touch of his love. Maybe you've been isolated from God. Well, he's here. Mm-hmm. And he can touch you.
Yeah, I'm just thinking if someone hears this and doesn't understand who they are, feels shame or feels put down or set aside, it's not the truth.
And Jesus is here for you. The other half of that great commission is us. Therefore, go and make disciples. There's action, and we were saying to the group yesterday that Penticton Bethel has a great history of action, of doing, and I think this morning we wanted to call you on in that and say it's not what's been in the past, but this is a new day. There's a new wave of action coming where you can get involved to make a difference and demonstrate in your community and around the world through your partners like the Pettingers and the McTavishes and the Bowlers. You can make a difference around the world by demonstrating who God is through your prayers, your financial generosity, your physical participation, demonstrating love, the love of who God is to others.